being at this moment escapes any narrow Darwinian calculus. Here is the truth. Most of what constitutes human well-being at any moment will escape narrow Darwinian calculus because most human beings are not driven simply by the dictates of procreation and survival and pain avoidance. And focusing on the need for survival doesn't beget a workable morality either. Take, for example, a simple thought experiment. You are the leader of a nation. That nation is more technologically advanced and more intellectually and culturally adaptive than its neighbors. Your nation is relatively small, and there are populations that live in your nation that consume disproportionate resources and refuse to integrate into your superior culture. You are surrounded by more populous and more barbarous nations. Thus, you have two options. First, you can wait for the inevitable demographic swamping of your nation, which, in the long run, will result in the collapse of humanity's survival since your neighbors are less adaptable. Second, you can attack your neighbors and take whatever measures are necessary in order to assure the long-term survival of your nation. That was Hitler's case for the Holocaust, after all. When the highest moral cause is material success, it looks a lot like having no morals at all. Is the Neo-Enlightenment sustainable? The Neo-Enlightenment view is that Enlightenment ideals would have come from anyone using reason and just happened to spring up in a particular place and time. How strange, then, that Pinker and Shermer and Harris and I agree on nearly all of the same values. Values that arose in the Judeo-Christian West alone, that spread from there outward, and that relied on the words of Revelation and the application of Greek teleology. It isn't strange, of course. We all grew up in a West formulated on the basis of thousands of years of history. History isn't merely happenstance. Movements don't merely wink into existence. To explain our current notions of individual rights, we must look to foundational ideas. The Neo-Enlightenment attempts to disown Judeo-Christian values and Greek teleology rest in historical ignorance. Neo-Enlightenment advocates tend to attribute every ill of the past several centuries to religious superstition and ancient mumbo-jumbo, failing to acknowledge that the values they hold dear rest on ancient foundations. Neo-Enlightenment philosophers like to connect religion with slavery, overlooking that the abolitionist movement in the West was almost entirely led by religious Christians, and ignoring that the global movement against slavery was led by the West. Slavery was only legally abolished in China in 1909, and slavery was only legally ended in Saudi Arabia in 1962. Even Enlightenment philosophers who opposed slavery did so because they were steeped in a Judeo-Christian tradition stemming from the basic notion of imago Dei and natural rights. The French philosopher Diderot, a declared atheist, wrote this regarding slavery in his encyclopedia. "This purchase of Negroes to reduce them into slavery is a negotiation that violates all religion, morals, natural law, and human rights." This wasn't a scientific perspective. It was a moral one, steeped in an abolitionist ideal born centuries beforehand in Catholic Europe. How about universal suffrage? Again, it wasn't science that supported that notion. It was a belief in the individual, born of the Judeo-Christian tradition and Greek reason. Yes, Elizabeth Cady Stanton wrote the Woman's Bible to challenge precisely the sexism she saw in the Bible, but in doing so, she cut herself off from influence with the suffrage movement, which reached success by leaving her behind and appealing to the better angels of the Christian nature. Frances Willard's Woman's Christian Temperance Union was far more instrumental in achieving the women's vote than Stanton. And naturally, even Stanton was groomed in a Christian society and inculcated Christian values. The same holds true of the movement against Jim Crow. Martin Luther King Jr. quoted the Bible far more than he quoted David Hume, and with good reason. It was the prophet Amos's dream that animated King's. "I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together." Yes, religious people have been on both sides of those movements. Of course they have, since we live in a world shaped by the Bible. But that's precisely the point. Those arguments have taken place in a common context in which biblical values are held up against other biblical values, in which Greek teleological reason is held up against itself. The traditions of individual liberty didn't spring into being in the West miraculously from nothing. They sprang from the tension between Jerusalem and Athens. Western civilization is a bridge suspended over the waters of chaos. Removing that tension collapses that bridge into the roiling river below. Carving off the roots of the Western tree while hoping to maintain the integrity of the trunk amidst high winds is an exercise in wishful thinking. In December 2017, I discussed this issue precisely with Harris, who was arguing that the Bible was a rotten text filled with awful lessons. I told him, "The moral system by which you suggest that that portion of the Bible should be removed is built on the moral system of the Bible, developed over 2,000 years. When Harris protested that his most considered view of ethics came from a broader framework of studies, I answered, "I'm not talking about your browsing in world literature. I'm talking about the fundamental moral precepts that you took to be moral from the time you were a child arise from a Western civilization predicated on Judeo-Christian notions of good and bad. Enlightenment ideals didn't arise in a vacuum, and treating them as though they can survive and thrive without the water and oxygen that nourished them for thousands of years, revelation and reason, telos and purpose, free will and responsibility, isn't likely to sustain those ideals beyond those who read the Neo-Enlightenment philosophers and scientists. The Neo-Enlightenment isn't teachable. Attempt to transplant it to the soil of other cultures, and it withers." Don't get me wrong. I think what Harris and Pinker and Shermer are doing in reviving Enlightenment ideals is spectacular. I agree with a lot of Enlightenment ideals, particularly regarding individual liberty and natural rights, as we've discussed. But the new scientific Athenians will have to make common cause with the devotees of Jerusalem rather than making war on them. The same holds true in reverse. For, as it turns out, there are larger philosophical threats to Western civilization that require our attention.